going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Hedging Screens podcast. Today, we have a lot of stuff that I want to talk about. And the first thing I have to let it be known is that the Brooklyn Nets did, in fact, play an NBA basketball game this past Sunday. In fact, many teams have begun playing NBA basketball again because the preseason has finally arrived. We are about 2 weeks away from the start of the 2021-22 NBA season. And just to get everything out of the way early, I did not watch any of the game on Sunday, but I promise you that I have a very, very valid reason for missing out on the contest. I was out of the country on Sunday afternoon, more specifically. I was riding ATVs through the Dominican countryside. So this past weekend, I went down to the Dominican Republic with my girlfriend because my brother and my sister-in-law, they were renewing their vows. They had been married before, like a couple years ago. I think it was like 4 years ago. I'm horrific with any anniversary that isn't mine. But it was kind of a very low-key thing. They didn't have a whole ceremonial whole celebration, which I think they wanted to give to both sides of the family. So I went down there with my girlfriend this past Thursday. We came back Monday. And I got to tell you guys, I had a lot of fun down there, but it was so fucking tiring. It was absolutely so tiring. The travel days, Thursday and Monday, were two of the worst travel days I had ever had. So Thursday, we take a flight out at like 10 something out of JFK. Now, for anyone who has traveled out or really just, yeah, out of the country or really just out of New York in general, at least if you're from downstate, LaGuardia and JFK are your only two options. JFK, you know, I'm not as critical as JFK, like the actual airport, as a lot of people are. I know it's a horrible airport, and I'm sorry if you guys can hear this, but there is, in fact, yard work being done in one of my neighbor's backyards, and yeah, it's pretty fucking loud, so I apologize about that. I had to get this recording in because I don't know if they were ever, I don't know when they're going to finish. I think they're going to be here all day. But anyway, so we leave the house, my girlfriend and I leave the house. My mom was kind enough to drive us to the airport. We leave at 6 a.m. We're on the road, and it took us 90 minutes to get to the airport. We're on the Southern State Parkway for, I don't know, maybe like 45 minutes in bumper-to-bumper traffic. The GPS is like, oh, you want to save some time? Take this route. Take this fucking alternate route. It took us like around Peninsula Boulevard or some shit like, you know, through not the parkway. And it was just the worst time I had ever had. And we're both freaking out. I had to take a shit, so I was extra anxious. I'm trying to not shit my pants in the car. And then, of course, before I can actually go and take my shit, we have to go through security and, you know, going through the terminal. Like, I couldn't take a shit until we were at the gate. Now, we're at the gate, we're hanging out a couple hours as you do during COVID times at the airport. And the flight itself was fine. It was about 4 hours. I'm a terrible flyer. Not in the sense that I hate flying. I really only have travel anxiety getting to and from the airport of my respective destination. When I'm on the plane, I'm fine. Of course, I'm uncomfortable. I don't sleep on planes either, so that just fucking adds another wrench to it. Like, I'm tired from the night before. I can't sleep on the plane. And, you know, one thing I realize is that I don't understand, like, how people have sex in airplane bathrooms. Like, how do people enter the Mile High Club? I'm not a big dude, right? I'm, like, barely 5'7", 150 pounds, and I can't even fit in the fucking bathroom. How are you going to fit two people in the bathroom? That's all I could think about the first time I got up to use the bathroom on this plane. It just was, like, it was insane. It was insane. Anyway, so we land in Punta Cana. We get to the resort, the Hard Rock Cafe, and the check-in is like an hour. We stood in the same spot for like about an hour. Meanwhile, my brother and pretty much everybody else had been there the day, like a day or two before. And that night was so bad. Me and my girlfriend, we get back to the room. Everyone's hanging out by the pool. We're like, we're going to eat because we're fucking starving. We haven't eaten all day. And then, you know, we might go out with you guys depending on how we feel. We did not go out that first night. Absolutely exhausted. Friday, I was exhausted as well. Saturday was the day of the wedding. Of course, exhausted. I was tired the whole weekend. The entire weekend, I was in bed by like 11 o'clock. Even the night of the wedding. You know, people were talking about going out after the ceremony because everyone wanted to party. And I texted my friend Sal, who is, he is one of my brother's siblings, but him and I are not related in any way. So my brother's got four half siblings. There's a whole lot going on with his side of the family. But after the wedding, of which I was in the bridal party, people planned on going out to the club. And I get back to my room, get dressed. I'm sitting on the bed, and I send Sal a text. I'm like, "Let me know when you guys are on your way to the club. You know, Antoinette and I will meet you down there." The next thing I remember is me waking up at 4:30, still clothed, just under the covers, in the clothes that I planned on going out in. So that was a wash. And then Sunday, of course, we were just riding ATVs. Other than that, we really didn't do anything. We did a lot of packing that day, and then we also had to jump through all these fucking hoops with like the COVID test coming back into the country, and then getting all the necessary paperwork to get back into the country, because you got to submit a negative COVID test that's taken within 3 days of the day of your flight, which was fine. Of course, I don't want to say of course, but I guess of course, because I seem to have bad luck when I travel. The people doing the test at the resort, they input my girlfriend's passport number wrong, so we had to go back the following day and change that. Of course, we had to be up early because we didn't know what it would look like on Sunday, if it was going to be a madhouse as it was on Saturday. But fortunately, we got all that taken care of, and as you can see, I'm back, not really too tan. Like, I don't really tan that much anyway. I do have a little bit of a sunburn, like, on my hairline, but yeah, I'm Italian. I don't tan at all. I got, like, a shade or two darker, but nothing crazy. And then today, I slept for 10 straight hours. It was the best sleep, one of the best sleeps of my life, right up there with the sleep I took when I came back from Miami back in July. If you guys remember that was a fucking ridiculous trip as well. But altogether, man, you know, I can't complain. I had a lot of fun. Of course, I'm super gracious that my brother and sister-in-law were nice enough to include me and my girlfriend in their special day. Of course, I wasn't thinking that they wouldn't, but you know, they didn't even have to do all this for everybody. This is what they wanted to do for both sides of the family. So it was very nice. It was very nice of them to include everybody. And there were like 100, no, maybe not 100, but there were like 75, 80 people at the wedding. It was a good time. It was a good time. The only thing that I didn't really like about the trip is that it wasn't too sunny throughout the weekend, which sucks. Thursday was nice, but of course we crashed because that fucking ridiculous travel day. And then Friday was nice. We did a lot of hanging out by the pool on Friday. It was probably the most relaxing part of the trip. I spent a lot of time with my nephew. We spent like 3 hours playing in the pool. This fucking kid would just not stop. He's 4 years old. He just turned four this summer, and there's so much energy. There was so much energy, and I don't even know like if he napped before the party that we had on Friday night. Like, this kid was, oh wait, no, hold on. I lied. Friday, me and my girlfriend pretty much hung out by ourselves, and then we did see my nephew at the pool. He was with his grandparents on my sister-in-law's side. But we didn't really spend time with him that day. He was hanging out with the grandparents. We let them chill. We wanted to chill as well. But Saturday, we were hanging out before the wedding, just in the pool. And that's when we got put on baby duty. Like, all of the aunts and uncles had a respective time just babysitting Oliver, his name is. And yeah, it was a handful. It was a lot of fun, but it was a handful. But I don't plan on traveling outside of the country until COVID is over. It was such a nightmare. Oh, and then of course, fucking Thursday, or not Thursday, Monday, we get up at 6 a.m., pack, get to the airport. We took you know, the travel agent who booked the trip for everybody had transportation set up for us, and that was fine. Nothing too crazy. Punta Cana, the airport, it's, you know, super quick. Like, we're in and out. Customs, we were through customs in like 3 minutes. Same thing when we landed in JFK, just in and out of customs. Maybe because we got to the front of the line, and we just got lucky after all the bad luck that had been sent our way that past weekend. You know, we kind of lucked out with that. But dude, the fucking Uber home from the airport was absolutely atrocious. We were in traffic the entire way home, even when we got off the parkway. and started traveling on like the secondary roads in my town. Still, traffic. Of course, it was rush hour. I can't really complain about anything. But I got home. I got Chipotle. I played a little bit of Rainbow Six Siege with the boys. And then I knocked. And I woke up. And here we are. And with that, that wraps up my little personal tale from the weekend. And we can get into the basketball stuff. The basketball stuff. I know that's probably why you guys are listening. Why give a fuck about me? If I were you, I wouldn't care about me either. But just as we had talked about, I don't know how many weeks ago, maybe like a month or so, ESPN released, you know, they released a survey very similar to the GM survey that the NBA publishes a couple weeks before the season. And the NBA's 2021-2022 GM survey, courtesy of NBA.com, is here. I'm just checking to make sure OBS is still running. Perfect. So this really kind of puts a pulse on the league as to see where, you know, certain teams fit, certain players fit in the perception of, in like just the perception and the makeup of how the NBA sits today. It's not often that the defending NBA champions, still mostly intact, aren't the favorites to win their own conference, but such is the case with the Milwaukee Bucks, who won their first title in 50 years behind superstar Giannis Antetokounmpo, who's still just 26 years old. When it comes to predicting the upcoming season, there's just no denying the talent on the Brooklyn Nets. In the 20th annual NBA.com GM survey, both Durant and Harden were named the best players at their position, and 72% of decision makers picked the Nets to win their first NBA championship. Okay. The GMs responded to 48 different questions about the best teams, players, coaches, and offseason moves. General managers were not permitted to vote for their own teams or personnel. Percentages are based on the pool of respondents to that particular question rather than all 30 GMs. I guess maybe not every GM answered every question. Maybe if, like, instead of, let's say, we'll just get right into it. Which team will win the 2022 NBA Finals? 72% picked the Brooklyn Nets. Now, I don't know if Sean Marks voted for everyone else, if he just decided to omit himself from this question because he's confident in his team and he just didn't want to, you know, jinx it or, you know, give anyone else any credit, which I totally understand. But the Bucks aren't even the favorites to knock off the Nets. Right now, as you can see on the screen, 72% for Brooklyn, 17% for the Lakers. And I'm totally in agreement here. Since I'm not a GM, I can vote for my favorite team. I can vote for my favorite players on my favorite team. But even with all of the stuff that's been ongoing with Kyrie Irving, I don't think it's a shock to say that the Brooklyn Nets are the favorites to win the upcoming NBA title. They have talent. They have depth. The team is, they did have a decent amount of turnover this past offseason, namely Jeff Green left. They added a bunch of new players, whether it's Cam Thomas through the draft or James Johnson, Patty Mills. That's always been my biggest question mark with this team, is how quickly will everyone be able to blend with one another. But of course, they still have Kevin Durant. They still have James Harden. At worst case scenario, they have Kyrie Irving for only half the season. Of course, that's, you know, the whole vaccination thing, not being permitted to play in New York City because of the vaccine requirements there. But I really don't see anyone else taking down the Brooklyn Nets. I am the most scared of the Milwaukee Bucks because they are, you know, they are the Brooklyn Nets just in the Midwest. I think you consider Wisconsin the Midwest. Anyway, boatload of talent, great chemistry, great coaching. Mike Budenholzer really surprised me this past postseason. For however many years prior to this, I always felt that Mike Budenholzer's teams just fell flat because he was so reluctant to adjust, it seemed like. And, you know, the Bucks, to their credit, they didn't win the title by accident. Mike Budenholzer outcoached every other coach he went up against. Giannis Antetokounmpo outplayed almost everybody else in the league, except outside of Kevin Durant. I mean, it was very obvious that those two were the best players in the postseason last year. Of course, no disrespect to Joel Embiid or Trae Young or Devin Booker, but listen, if the Nets didn't have all those injury problems, the playoffs are looking drastically different. But of course, I still give a ton of credit to Milwaukee. Me personally, I like them better than the Lakers. I don't know if the Lakers are going to be able to pull it off this year. They lost a considerable amount of talent. Kyle Kuzma, KCP, Montrezl Harrell. Yes, I know they got Russell Westbrook. They got Malik Monk, Kendrick Nunn. They still have Anthony Davis. They still have LeBron James. They have Carmelo Anthony as well. They have Trevor Ariza. I just don't know if... I feel like this is a case with the Houston Rockets from a couple of years ago. You know, they win the title in the bubble, and then every year they just get a little bit worse and a little bit worse. Of course, I think they're one of the best teams in the Western Conference. They certainly do have a chance to win the title. I'm just not particularly confident in them. Of course, if they change my mind, that's great. But I don't foresee it. I'm going to skip the Eastern Conference and Western Conference rankings, or maybe I won't. So we got Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Miami, Philly, Atlanta, Boston, Indiana. I kind of like this. I do. Yeah, I like this a decent amount. I would have picked the Knicks. I'm sorry. They're voting for the top four teams in the conference. I apologize. So the Brooklyn Nets got 83%. Or 37% of the total vote, and then Milwaukee, Miami. Safe to say Brooklyn, Milwaukee, and Miami, and Philadelphia as well will be competing for those top four seeds. It's going to get a little weird, like, after Philly, though. And I don't think Philly is that much better than Atlanta. Well, actually, maybe I got to pick my words a little bit more carefully. I think the Sixers have a lot less margin for error than they have in previous years, because we know Ben Simmons is not going to be there. If he does show up, I will be thoroughly surprised. I think everyone else who covers the NBA, who works around the league, will be surprised, because all signs point to that not happening. And he's a big piece of their team. Like, people are really beginning to underrate the talent that Ben Simmons is. I thought that was on me. I thought it was on the phone. So, they could finish as best as third. They could finish as worst as sixth, maybe. I mean, we got Milwaukee, obviously Milwaukee, Miami, Boston, Atlanta, New York. There are going to be a lot of exciting playoff races throughout the Eastern Conference. I'd say the same with the West as well. You have LA, Utah, Phoenix, Denver. Those are pretty much considered the upper echelon of the Western Conference. Of course, the Clippers would be there if it weren't for Kawhi Leonard being hurt. We don't know when he's coming back. Who are some other teams? I think the Warriors finish a lot better than people expect this season. I think Dallas has a decent season. Portland can have a decent season as well. But I think the playoff races, you know, after the All-Star break, the NBA is going to be a lot. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I'm almost certain of it. It's just the league is too dense with talent. And if it's not entertaining, I think it's going to be because there are a rash of freak injuries again. I hope there aren't. I'm just going to put that out there. I hope that no one gets hurt this upcoming season, and that, you know, everyone just, I don't even know where I'm going with this thought. Fuck it. We're going to move on. I lost my train of thought. I don't care. We're getting to the player section. First question, who will win the 2021-22 NBA MVP? Kevin Durant, Luka Doncic, and Giannis are the top three. KD and Luka are the only guys with more than 13% of the vote. They got 37 and 33, respectively. It's hard to argue this. I think that if the Brooklyn Nets are the best team in the league and Kevin Durant plays 75, 80, 85, hopefully 100% of the games, if we're being honest. But if Kevin Durant plays 80% of the games, best player on the best team, he'll bring home his second MVP without a hiccup. I think Luka's going to be great, although depending on where Dallas finishes, you'll have to look at guys like Devin Booker, Chris Paul, Donovan Mitchell, Steph Curry, LeBron, of course, Anthony Davis. Like, I'm kind of surprised that there is so much, or that there is such a lack of parity in this selection. Like, 37% for KD, 33% for Luka, 13% for Giannis, 7% for Embiid and James Harden, and then 3% for Steph Curry. I'm really shocked that this isn't closer. Like, that's just me. So I'm rocking with Kevin Durant. Of course, I would love to see LeBron on here. AD, Devin Booker, all the guys that I had previously mentioned. If you were starting a franchise today and can sign any NBA player, who would it be? This question is, it's so, I love these kinds of questions because of how vague it is. It doesn't specify long-term or short-term, which definitely alters the player pool or the selection choices. First two guys, although I don't think you're picking anyone other than these two in either regard, Luka at 43% and Giannis at 40%. Also receiving votes, Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant, LeBron James, Nikola Jokic, and Zion Williamson. Luka and Giannis were 1 and 2 on this for this same question last year. Me, I'm picking Giannis. I think I'm going to pick Giannis. I know that Luka is the more well-rounded player, but it's kind of hard to not pick the finals MVP. That's just me. And that's good for either long-term or short-term. You know, if I'm looking to win a title within the next year or two, you might go with someone who's a little bit older, like LeBron or Steph Curry or Kevin Durant. But we don't know if that's the case. I'm considering this like an expansion decision. Like, if you could get one of the stars for a team in Seattle or Austin or St. Louis or, you know, Vancouver, any of the cities that the league has been talking about putting a new team, I would go with Giannis. I could understand why people pick Luka as well. I'm not upset at that decision, but there are so many great young players that aren't mentioned here. Ja Morant, Trae Young. They do talk about Zion, which is nice. Really, any of these guys that are mentioned here, you can't go wrong with picking any of these guys. Which player forces opposing coaches to make the most adjustments? Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, LeBron, James Harden, Giannis, and Nikola Jokic. Also receiving votes, Luka and Joel Embiid. It's got to be Steph Curry. It's got to be Steph Curry because the weird thing about Steph Curry is that you know you can't guard him, but because he doesn't have the physical traits like everyone else on this list, you think that you can box him in somewhere and that you can actually develop a game plan to slow him down. Like Kevin Durant, dude is 7 feet tall, has every basketball move in his bag. You're not stopping him. LeBron, 6'8", 260 pounds. He is a fucking linebacker that is as every bit as good a scorer as Kevin Durant. Giannis, self-explanatory. Nikola Jokic, no, he's not an athletic specimen, but still, dazzling playmaker, really improved as a scorer since coming into the league. You know, multi-level scorer, for sure, can play in the post, can stretch the floor. But Steph Curry being 6'3", being like 130 pounds soaking wet, you think that, oh, you just trap him up by half court in the corner and you can get the ball out of his hand. Well, then he splits the double team and then you're playing 5-on-3 with your two guys lagging behind him. And then he's either going to just pull up for a three after breaks the double team, passes it out to Draymond Green. They kick the ball around, you know, whatever, however Steve Kerr facilitates their game plan for that day. It's definitely Steph Curry. If I were an opposing coach, I would more than anyone else fear Steph Curry because we know that we're not stopping Kevin Durant or LeBron James. And of course, we know that about Steph Curry, but he lulls you into this false sense of security that, hey, maybe my game plan is strong enough. It's like, if I'm the Clippers and I got Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, you think you're good putting one of them on Steph Curry when, in fact, that could not be farther from the case. Which player is most likely to have a breakout season in 2021? There are a lot of guys on this list, starting with Jaren Jackson Jr., Anthony Edwards, Michael Porter Jr., Darius Garland, Keldon Johnson, Ja Morant, Kevin Porter Jr., also receiving votes, DeAndre Ayton, LaMelo Ball, Lonzo Ball, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, DeAndre Hunter, Caris LeVert, Terrence Mann, Karl Anthony Towns, Devin Vassell, and Zion Williamson. I think that all of these guys, or the majority of them, are going to have great seasons. I think that Darius Garland is finally going to earn a lot more notoriety. Like, I think that once this upcoming season is done, him and Colin Sexton will actually make Cleveland Cavaliers basketball worth watching again. That might be a little bit of a hot take, but, you know, Jaren Jackson Jr., We got to see. We got to see. It sucks when you have players coming off of injuries, and I think that's what, at least I think he was coming off of an injury last season. Yeah, he played 11 games last year and then averaged 17 points a game the year before. So we'll see. We'll see. Same thing with Michael Porter Jr. He kind of already broke out and got himself a max contract, which we'll probably talk about later, at least in regards to what happened or what's happening in Phoenix right now. But Michael Porter Jr. already had his breakout season. He went from like 11 points a game to nearly 20. How much more is he going to break out, especially with Nikola Jokic there? And what will Jamal Murray's injury have on that impact? I think that's why a lot of people are leaning towards Michael Porter Jr., because let's face it, the Nuggets need someone to replace Jamal Murray, at least until he comes back. And there's currently no timetable on his return. You got to think like January at the earliest, maybe Christmas, depending on how well his rehab is going. But I think, unfortunately, yeah, Jamal Murray being down really bolstered Michael Porter Jr.'s case. But there are so many guys on this list. Like, I can't even pick one. I would love for Caris LeVert to finally just like break through the ceiling that has kept him at the same spot for the last couple of years, because he's got so much talent and he just hasn't been able to put it all together quite yet. And as a Caris LeVert fanboy myself, there's nothing more that I want to see than him succeed. But lock it in, guys. Darius Garland. Now, this is talking about the best players at each position. I'm not going to go too in-depth because I think they kind of speak for themselves. Best point guard in the NBA, Steph Curry. Obviously, best shooting guard in the NBA, James Harden. Obviously, best small forward in the NBA, Kevin Durant. Obviously, best power forward in the NBA, Giannis. Obviously, best center in the NBA. This is the only one where it gets tricky, and I will note that there have been guys on all of these lists that appear elsewhere. Like, LeBron received votes as the best point guard, the best small forward, and the best power forward. So let's just keep in mind the positional fluidity that a lot of players have nowadays. But I don't see any issue with any of these. The only one, best center in the NBA, Nikola Jokic kind of blew out Joel Embiid's 63% to 23%. I love Nikola Jokic's game so much. I know we just came off winning an MVP, but the guy he beat out for that MVP was Joel Embiid. And to me, those guys are more centers than Giannis is. Giannis is definitely like in this weird spot. He's a tweener between a 4 and a 5, as weird as that is, because he is way more skilled on the perimeter, at least in terms of creating his shot, than Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic are. But he doesn't have that typical center body type. Like, he can play with his back to the basket, but he doesn't prefer it. He likes to get downhill, get into the paint, use his length and his athleticism to his advantage. I wouldn't consider him a center. Like, I wouldn't have voted him as the best center. It would have just been a toss-up between Embiid and Jokic for me. I do think Nikola Jokic has the edge because as good a scorer as Joel Embiid, more versatile when it comes to stretching the floor and being a reliable three-point shooter. Of course, he is an exceptional rebounder. I can't say enough about Nikola Jokic's playmaking either. Of course, is a little bit of a lackluster defender, and that's where Joel Embiid gets his advantage. But yeah, I don't have a problem with someone picking either Embiid or Jokic. Okay. Now we are into the offseason moves. We still have a little bit. We're going to be here for a little bit. This might be a lengthy episode. I wonder if this one will crack 90 minutes. This will be the first. That would be a first, at least in terms of solo for me. Or maybe, you know, I don't know. We'll see. Which team made the best overall moves this offseason? Miami Heat, Los Angeles Lakers, Brooklyn Nets, Houston Rockets, and the Washington Wizards. I'm a little bit surprised that the Chicago Bulls weren't higher up on this list. They had the best offseason, in my opinion. I'm taking them over Miami. I'm taking them over Los Angeles. I wouldn't even put the Lakers on this list. I would have had Chicago, Miami, and then Brooklyn as my top three. I would have left it at that. I do think that Kyle Lowry makes the Heat a lot better, but there are still some concerns with me about the Heat and their depth. I know who left the game last night? PJ Tucker left the game last night. Another good acquisition by them, at least I think. I'm trying to remember when they acquired him. I don't know. Fuck it. I lost that thought as well. But yeah, I'm putting Chicago. I love Alex Caruso, DeMar DeRozan, and Lonzo Ball. That is a very, very, very solid core going forward. So that's who I'm rocking with. Which one player acquisition will make the biggest impact? Kyle Lowry at number one, Russell Westbrook at number two. Also receiving votes, Spencer Dinwiddie and Jonas Valanciunas. Another interesting one. Of course, this is excluding re-signings, because if that were the case, you would have seen, you definitely would have seen Chris Paul on there. You'd have seen Kevin Durant on there as well. And Kawhi Leonard, maybe. But, you know, the whole injury thing. But, yeah, I agree with this. I agree with this 100%. Kyle Lowry will do more for the Heat than Russell Westbrook does for the Lakers, at least in terms of contributing to their winning. And we'll leave it at that. What was the most underrated player acquisition? Larry Nance, Patty Mills, Spencer Dinwiddie, Lonzo Ball, Kemba Walker. I love that Larry Nance is at the top of this list. I love it a lot. I also like the fact that Kemba Walker cracked the top five, because I think that he makes the Knicks a lot better than everyone else thinks. I hate to give credit to the Knicks, and I hate to give credit to their fans, but Kemba Walker is going to make the Knicks very good this upcoming season. The Knicks have a good team. Of course, the Nets have a better one. Had to sneak that in there. But I don't hate what the Knicks are doing in Manhattan. I do, however, I don't want to say that. Fuck it. I also don't hate Larry Nance in Portland. Disruptive defender, improving playmaker, could develop a little bit more of a three-point shot, but Larry Nance, well, I think that the Blazers are in this weird position where this is one of the final seasons they will have to make a significant impression on the Western Conference. And I'm talking about finishing at a high seed, getting to the second round, maybe getting to a conference finals as well. If that's not the case, Damian Lillard is already, you know, kind of disgruntled with the organization, failing to do better than any other previous seasons. It's just going to create a whole cascade of problems for that team in the upcoming campaigns. Which team will be most improved in 2021-2022? Chicago, Golden State, the Lakers, Charlotte, and New Orleans. I'm running with the Bulls. Clip it and ship it. I have no more to say on this. What was the most surprising move of the offseason? Russell Westbrook to the Lakers, and then DeMar and Lonzo to Chicago. Yeah, definitely Russ getting traded to the Lakers, because there was like really no inkling of it beforehand. And even in the aftermath, like the reports coming out, it's like, oh, Russ didn't explicitly say that he wanted to get traded, but he was like, hey, I want to play for the Lakers. If you can make that happen, that'd be great. If not, you know, whatever. Shit happens. Also receiving votes, Danny Ainge stepping down in Boston. That was also very out of the blue, although not very surprising, just given what Boston has gone through recently. Like, they drafted very well. They have a bunch of excellent young players. Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart. But they haven't. Danny Ainge, it's been a tough run. It's been a tough run for him, because outside of the draft, they've had an exceptionally difficult time attracting big time free agents. I mean, they got Gordon Hayward. They had Al Horford for a little bit, but they were never able to bring Kawhi. They weren't able to bring in Anthony Davis. They weren't able to bring in Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving or Paul. Well, I mean, they did get Kyrie Irving, but that was separate. That wasn't free agency. That was, of course, via trade. And Kyrie didn't even want to play for Boston. So it was kind of like the Cavs were flipping him the middle finger, like, okay, fuck you. We're not going to send you to a team you do want to play for, a team like Miami, a team like the New York Knicks, a team like the Brooklyn Nets, although I'm not sure if he wanted to play for Brooklyn at the time, but whatever. It just, they never made it. It was always, it always felt like it was a swing and a miss for Danny Ainge outside of the draft. And of course, when you extorted the Brooklyn Nets for all of those draft picks, a couple of them were going to have to hit, and a couple of them did. You got Jason Tatum, you got Jaylen Brown. It's a nice foundation for Brad Stevens to try to continue to build something on. But yeah, Russ to the Lakers, 100% biggest shock of the offseason. So now we're talking about rookies and international. I got to say it, guys. I don't know anything about the rookies coming up. Jalen Green is predicted to be the rookie of the year. Evan Mobley is predicted to be the best player in 5 years. Which rookie was the biggest steal of the draft? I don't know anything about these guys. Yeah, I don't know anything about these guys. I have no commentary for this. Who's the best international player in the NBA? Giannis, 100%. Who is the best international player not in the NBA? Nikola Mirotic. Do we remember Nikola Mirotic? You most likely do, as him being the guy who got his fucking jaw busted by Bobby Portis in Chicago. He left the NBA to go play in, I'm pretty sure it was definitely in Europe. I think it was with Real Madrid, because he no longer got down with the NBA lifestyle. He might have felt some pressure. I could say safely that it was probably very difficult for him being, you know, away from his family. Going to Europe for a lot of guys, especially European-born players, it's just easier for them in every regard. They're more accustomed to how the games are played over there, to the rules, how the games are officiated. They're more in tune with the lifestyle. That's a big thing. American life versus European life is way different. And then the money is comparable. Like, guys like Nikola Mirotic, the top-level guys in Europe, will get a lot of money over there, and it'll be, on average, about the same what they'll get in the NBA. It's like, if you can go to Europe as Nikola Mirotic and make $10 million, and, you know, you come here, you might get $2 million or three, or $12 million or $3 million. Of course, $2 or $3 million is a lot of money, but is it enough to change your mind that much? It's not like you get 10 million in Europe and 35 in the States. Like, that, obviously, take that deal. But I don't really know who else it could be. Like, there's just so much talent, and that's not even including just Europe. It's like, you have to account for South America, Africa, Australia, Asia. So this is a loaded question. I don't know how any GMs managed to answer this. And with that, we're moving on to the defensive portion of the survey. Best defender in the NBA, Giannis, by a pretty sizable margin, 30 percentage points ahead of Rudy Gobert, who is ahead of Jrue Holiday and Kawhi, and then Ben Simmons, Jimmy Butler, Anthony Davis, and Draymond Green also received votes. I think that still Draymond Green should have been a lot higher on this list. He should have been in the top five, 100%, or the top four, I should say. Giannis and Draymond are elite individual defenders, and they can guard anybody. They can guard anybody in the NBA. Giannis will guard Steph Curry with the same effectiveness as he does Kevin Durant. Of course, those two guys are still probably going to get whatever, because Giannis will not be on them the whole game, but that is a luxury that the Bucks have with Giannis. Rudy Gobert is not doing that. Jrue Holiday, as great as he is not guarding all five positions. Kawhi Leonard is not guarding all five positions. I think it comes down to either Giannis or Draymond Green, and you guys can flip a coin for me, and that'll be my decision. Heads for Giannis, tails for Draymond Green. Best perimeter defender in the NBA. This makes it a lot easier to pick, guys. Jrue Holiday, Ben Simmons, Jimmy Butler, Kawhi, and Giannis. Of course, Patrick Beverley getting some love. Marcus Smart as well. I think it's got to be either Jrue Holiday or Ben Simmons. Of course, if we're talking about just on the perimeter, guarding guards, potentially a small forward, it's tough. It's tough. I might go with Ben Simmons. Just maybe. He does have the height advantage. He does have the athleticism advantage. But, of course, Jrue Holiday is an all-defensive player in his own right. And fuck it. I'll just go with Ben Simmons. Make it easy. Best interior defender, Rudy Gobert. That's not even up for debate. It's Rudy Gobert. It's nobody else. The most versatile defender in the NBA, Giannis, Ben Simmons, LeBron James. Most versatile defender in the NBA is LeBron James. I mean, in theory, yeah. In theory, 100%. But ahead of Draymond Green? No, we're not doing this. We're not doing that. No fucking chance. I'm picking Draymond Green for this one. I was just talking about how Draymond Green is arguably the best defender in the NBA because of his versatility. And then I'm just going to fucking not pick him as the most versatile defender in the NBA. Man, y'all got me fucked up. Best defensive team in the NBA. Why are the Lakers on here, dude? Why? Is Rob Pelinka committing fraud? Is Jeannie Buss committing fraud to get the Lakers on these lists? The best defensive team in the NBA is not the Lakers. They will be, at best, the 15th best team this year. LeBron James, not a good defender. Anthony Davis, good defender. Well, great defender. But Carmelo Anthony, Malik Monk, Kendrick Nunn? It's like, yeah, like, I get it. They got Trevor Ariza. But you know who they lost? Montrezl Harrell and KCP. No one on this current roster defends at the same level, or no one other than Anthony Davis defends at the same level as those guys. It's a wrap. I would have picked literally any other team. The Knicks, the Sixers, the Suns. I'd put the fucking Nets on there ahead of the Lakers. That is such a dumb question. I think the best defensive team in the NBA is the Bucks. I really do think so. The Jazz, you can make the case for them as well. Actually, you know, I think I'm going to walk that back. I think the Jazz are the best defensive team in the NBA. Yeah, clip it and ship it. Utah Jazz, best defensive team in the NBA. Best head coach in the NBA. Eric Spoelstra, Monty Williams, Quinn Snyder, Greg Popovich, and Mike Budenholzer. I feel like Eric Spoelstra has fucking dominated this list for the last, like, decade or so. Yeah, see, I don't think I have enough of... How do you pick this? Like, how do you decide who the best coach in the NBA is? Because there's so much to it. And we don't know what coaches are involved in every aspect of their game plan. Because technically, Mike Budenholzer is the best coach in the NBA. But yet, he only got 3% of the vote. How does this work out? I'm not going to pick any of these guys. I'm going to pick Steve Nash because I'm biased and I don't care. Next one. Which head coach is the best manager, motivator of people? I don't know how you can answer this question. Like, this is definitely the GM part of the fucking, or the GM exclusive part of the conversation, because I'm not in the locker room with these fucking guys. I mean, Monty Williams, yeah. And I'm sure that he has quite the flair for motivation, just given everything that has happened with him over the time of him being in the NBA. But, like, I can't answer this question. I don't fucking know. Which head coach makes the best in-game adjustments? Tyronn Lue. I know Tyronn Lue has, what's the word? He really blew up after out-coaching Steve Kerr in the 2016 finals. But, like, again, like, I'm not smart enough to answer this question. Like, I don't have the extensive schematic basketball knowledge to answer this question. So I'm just going to bypass it. Which head coach runs the best offense? From the eye test, I'm going to say Steve Kerr. Because when fully healthy, the Golden State Warriors game plan was the gold standard, pun intended, was the gold standard for the pace and space revolution. Teams were trying to copy what Steve Nash, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson were doing. And this was before they got Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant only made it better. But look at all of the up-and-coming coaches now, especially someone like Kenny Atkinson, who was very clearly someone who tried to emulate Steve Nash's style. Think about all of the other guys. Mike Budenholzer has taken pages out of Steve Kerr's playbook. I'm trying to think who else. Really, those are the two guys that come to mind. But really, any team that has focused their offense on transition, three-pointers, transition, getting a lot of threes, and actually running, like, sets to get guys open has taken a playbook out of Steve Nash. And don't get it twisted, they still run that. They just do it a little bit differently because they don't have that extra weapon in Klay Thompson, but they still make it work. I'm going with Steve Nash for this one. The next question is the same question, but on defense. Tom Thibodeau, dude, I don't know how Tom Thibodeau managed to get the Knicks into such an elite defense so quickly, but if you pick anyone else than him, you're just wrong. It's proof. They were statistically one of the five best defenses in the NBA last season. Given how young they were and how they had a rookie head coach, that does it for me. I have no problem giving Tom Thibodeau his due. Which newer relocated head coach will make the biggest impact on his new team? Rick Carlisle, Indiana, Ime Udoka, Boston, Jason Kidd, Dallas, get him the fuck out of here. Chauncey Billups can get the fuck out of there as well. Jamal Mosley in Orlando, Wes Unseld Jr. in Washington. No disrespect to Mr. Mosley and Wes Unseld Jr. I don't think that they have the rosters at this stage to make their teams significantly better. Like, Orlando in particular, they have a lot of work to do. And Jamal Mosley cannot suit up for the team and fix it himself. I think that, you know, he'll be okay because he is in Orlando and no one's really paying attention to the Magic right now. But I think Rick Carlisle, like, I could see why Rick Carlisle landed on top of this list. I mean, he's been in the game for a long time. Dallas always ran a very, very nasty offense. Their defense was a little suspect, but they also didn't really have the pieces to make that work. I think Indiana does very well under Rick Carlisle. Who's the best assistant coach in the NBA? Kenny Atkinson, Darvin Ham, Scott Brooks, David Vanterpool, and Nate Tibbetts. I'm going to say Kenny Atkinson or Scott Brooks only because they have head coaching experience. I'm also going to bypass this question. Which active player will make the best head coach someday? Chris Paul, Rajon Rondo, TJ McConnell, Mike Conley, Udonis Haslem, Garrett Temple. Also receiving votes, Harrison Barnes, Malcolm Brogdon, Draymond Green, Joe Ingles. I like that answer a lot. LeBron James or Patty Mills. Right away, I'm knocking all of these stars off this list. I can't remember a star head coach or a star NBA player transitioning to coaching and really excelling at it. I don't know if it's possible, at least not at the NBA level, because, like, when you're someone who is that great, you see the sport way differently than everybody else. And as a player, that's an elite skill to have. But as a coach, if you don't know how to articulate yourself properly, or you don't know how to break down what you're seeing to someone who's not as talented as you, you might fall flat in that regard. Of course, there's not that's not everything to coaching. There's being a motivator, being really, more so than anything else, a PR person, and just managing the personalities of everybody on your team, especially with it being a player-driven league. I think Rondo would be fine. TJ McConnell, probably. I think he would be a decent head coach. Like, he just guys who understand. I don't even know how the fuck I'm going to answer this question. Like, this is, fuck this question, dude. I'm over it. Miscellaneous. What team is the most fun to watch? Brooklyn Nets. Yep, clip it and ship it. Which team has the best home court advantage? Utah Jazz. I would imagine it's pretty difficult to focus on the game when you have the fans calling you slurs, very much like what happens in Boston. I'm sorry. That was so uncalled for. I'm taking shots at the Jazz for no reason. But really, it's got to be Denver. Who the fuck wants to play basketball a mile above sea level? Literally fucking nobody. And the Nuggets do that 41 times a year. We're moving on. Which team has the most promising young core? Atlanta, Houston, Boston, Memphis, New Orleans, Phoenix. Atlanta. Yeah. Let's go with Atlanta. Trae Young, Clint Capella, Kevin Herter, DeAndre Hunter, John Collins, Bogdan Bogdanovich, although he's a little bit older. I think he's like in his late 20s, something like that. Which player is the most athletic? Zion. Yeah, no one is. I don't think anyone is picking anyone other than Zion. That guy is, he's a literal freak. He's a literal freak of nature. Pure shooter, best pure shooter. Steph Curry is the only guy on this list. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Kevin Durant makes a case for himself. Steph Curry makes a case for himself, but we all know there's nobody like Steph. Which player is fastest with the ball? De'Aaron Fox. These are so these questions are fucking ridiculous. I love them. Which player is the best passer? LeBron. I'm going with Jokic. Actually, LeBron and Jokic. Yeah, I'm siding with the GMs on this one. I'm split with them as my number one. Either or. Which player is the best leader? We got Chris Paul. Yeah, see, this is like questions like this, like philosophical questions are so hard to guard, and I apologize that I'm fucking literally scratching this layer of skin off of myself on camera. These philosophical questions, like, they don't do it for me. Because which player is the best leader in the NBA? It's an impossible question to answer. Like, Chris Paul, okay, I get it. But Giannis literally led his team to the finals. To a championship, not even to the finals. I don't know. Most versatile player in the NBA? I think it's got to be LeBron. Yeah, I don't foresee anyone else beating that. I would definitely give Nikola Jokic. Nah, we're going with LeBron. Which player has the best basketball IQ? LeBron. Okay, I'll take that one. I get it. Which player would you want taking the shot with the game on the line? 41% with Kevin Durant. And guess what, bitch? Universe, fate of the universe on the line. Gun to my head. Who do I want taking a shot? Iguodala. I'm just kidding. I don't want Andre Iguodala anywhere near the ball with the game on the line. Kevin Durant, clip it and shove it. What rule regarding play, schedule, draft, lottery most needs to change? Take/transition fouls. Please get them the fuck out of the game. Please. I know the NBA is doing their best to change how the game is officiated, and mainly their big point of interest, I guess, were non-basketball plays where the player is, the offensive player is committing a, or yeah, where the offensive player is doing a non-basketball move to try to draw a foul, which is basically, put it like this, Steph Curry is on the three-point line, and I'm only referencing this because I watched it in the preseason game before I passed out. Steph Curry has the ball on the three-point line. He pump fakes. Defender jumps up, like, vertically. Defender maintains verticality going up. And he lands without jumping forward, but yet Steph Curry will initiate the contact and be awarded with the foul. I understand that. I like that the officials are working on that. But I fucking hate transition fouls. If you're going to get beat in transition, don't fucking foul, because if you do foul, it should just be a clear path automatically. I don't care. Everyone loves to talk about how the NBA's TV viewership is going down. While I love the NBA very much, the number one factor in that is that the games become unwatchable at times with how liberal are the referees with their whistles. Too many fouls. It's all about the flow of the game. The game has to flow nice to be watchable. Look at football. The officials, most of the time, do not throw flags for holding or pass interference on every play unless they're flagrant. When shit like that happens almost every play, of course, call it when it greatly impacts the outcome of a certain down. But, and also, the NFL, I'm talking about the NFL in regards to rule changes when they're still trying to enforce that fucking taunting bullshit. Stupid. Anyway, back to basketball. The NBA needs to adopt FIBA-like officiating because the games just flow so much better. And I don't think it would impact the league that much because these guys, look at when these guys go to the Olympics and they still just shit on everybody. They dominate. Kevin Durant dominates at the Olympics. Steph Curry dominates international play. Damian Lillard dominates international play. These guys are so talented that rule changes like that are not going to affect them that much. Say what you will. I know people think that these changes that the NBA is trying to institute is going to make James Harden turn into fucking Shannon Brown, that Trae Young is going to fucking be Bob Cousy or some shit. It's really not. Those guys are going to get their points regardless. If they might get like two or three fewer points, but they're still going to be mid-20s, you know, near 30. It's not going to impact them that much. Additional coaches challenge, keep it when successful. I think the NBA is fine with how the coaches challenges are right now. I don't think they're an issue. I think there are much more pressing issues that the NBA should worry on. So we'll put that on the back burner. Free agency before the draft, I don't know how big of a difference that would make for a lot of teams. It would, of course. I don't know. It would change the draft philosophy of a lot of teams. But again, I don't ever foresee that being in. I've never heard of this being an issue before. And this got the same amount of votes or the same percentage of votes as schedule changing when everyone knows that something has to be done about the NBA schedule. And I'm not talking about a fucking play-in tournament at the end of the season. Like, cut the games, figure out how to do fewer 4 games in 5 nights, just something to keep the players from breaking down and having to load manage. That's another thing that people love to talk about. Seeding playoffs, 1 through 16, that would be, I would love to see something like that, but I think that is a significantly more drastic change. I don't know if the NBA wants to entertain that right now. And then, what the fuck is Elam ending? I don't even know what? I don't know what that is. Elam ending? Elam ending? Hold on, I'm going to search this up. Fuck. What is this? The history of the Elam ending, which was a huge hit? What? Via the Elam ending, that phrase was trending for most of the fourth quarter of the game and had everyone wondering what the meaning... The easy explanation for the Elam ending, I think I'm pronouncing that wrong, is that it's a format where the final score necessary to win the game is predetermined. In the All-Star game, they took the team score that was leading after three quarters and added 24 points to that score, which brought us to 157. Some versions of the Elam ending have the clock shut off after the first timeout with less than 4 minutes left in the game, but with the Kobe Bryant tribute, there was no clock in the entire fourth quarter of the game. So it's like when you're playing, I guess it's like when you're playing pickup and it's like, oh, you know, we played a 21 or some shit. You play to a predetermined score. And who the fuck is voting for that? Like, who is voting for this? Who's voting for Elam ending over literally anything else on this fucking list? Over transition fouls and the schedule? What? Also receiving votes, agent and executive barrier needs to be tighter. Allow more bench celebration. Corner three, same distance as above break. What? No, dude. What? You literally want to change how the fuck... You want to change the math of the basketball court. Draft tiebreaker, opposite of playoff tiebreaker. Encourage diversity of play. I don't know what that means. In-season tournament, get rid of it. I hope that's what they mean. Get rid of it. Lottery odds, mandatory draft medical information, non-basketball moves. Okay, this should have been at the top of the fucking list. One free throw attempt for shooting foul? What? Literally hits blunt and then takes the fucking GM survey. Okay, we are done with this. I'm moving on to Andrew Wiggins. All right, so for all of you guys who don't know, Andrew Wiggins was selfless enough to finally get his first dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. Congratulations to Andrew Wiggins. I said last week that people who had these ridiculous views about the vaccine were dumbasses, or at least for, you know, being dumbass anti-vaxxers. I thought, you know, great. Andrew Wiggins got the vaccine. He got the shot. He's immunized, or at least halfway immunized, or unless he got Johnson & Johnson fully immunized. But then we saw some of the quotes that he was talking about. Or I don't want to say the quotes that he was talking about, but we saw what he said to the media in regard to the vaccine. This is courtesy of Sean Hyken, who I think writes for somebody. He writes for Bleacher Report. Okay. But we've seen Sean Hyken. He's not a fucking, you know, I respect him. I respect this guy. He does a lot of good work. Andrew Wiggins says, I felt like the only options were to get vaccinated or not play in the NBA. It was a tough decision. Hopefully in 10 years it works out and I'm still healthy. What the fuck does that mean? What? Like, so this means that if anything happens to him in 10 years, it's the vaccine's fault. Meanwhile, the vaccine doesn't even stay in your body for that long. I think it's gone within 2 weeks, if I'm not mistaken. Or actually, how long does the COVID vaccine stay in your body? All right, this is taking too long. I didn't find it. Anyway, I don't think the vaccine stays in the body for that long because my smooth-brained, non-doctor, non-PhD understanding of it is that you get the shot, the body recognizes the shot, and that the body, while recognizing the shot, creates antibodies to defend against it in the event that it sees the same virus re-enter your system. So it's not lingering in your body this entire time, but the memory of it is there. At least I'm pretty sure. Again, talk to your fucking doctor. I'm literally just in my room talking to myself about this. Talk to your doctor about how the fucking COVID vaccine works. Again, not medical disclaimer. Wee-woo. Medical disclaimer, I'm a dumbass, don't listen to me. Wiggins continued, it's not something I wanted to do, but I was kind of forced into it. I guess to do certain stuff and to work, you don't own your body. Hopefully there's people who are stronger than me and keep fighting for what they believe in. Keep fighting for being a dumbass. I really don't care. But yes, this is the point. This is the point of why people like myself get so outraged when people just act like it's about them. No, dickhead, you get the vaccine for everybody else. It's a selfless act. It's a selfless act. Yes, sometimes you don't have total autonomy over your body, but that only applies when we are dealing with something that is highly contagious and deadly. Think about, seatbelts. Drunk driving laws. Don't think about abortion, because guess what? Pregnancy isn't contagious. COVID is. I just farted. Damn. I hope that didn't pick up. I might cut that out. Oh, God. Wiggins continues, I had a bad reaction a few years to Tylenol, and since then, I haven't wanted to take anything. Yeah, dude. I also have allergic reactions to medicine. I'm allergic to penicillin. Before I got the shot, the nurse was like, do you have any allergies? And I was like, penicillin. And she looked at the other nurse and was like, is he okay to have this? Of course, my doctor never said that I wasn't able to get the vaccine. My mom knows about this allergic reaction. Everyone, or my file in the hospital, says I have this type of allergic reaction. Of course, it's nothing crazy. I get like nauseous, I guess. It hasn't happened since I was a kid, so I don't even know. When I told them, I was like, hey, I'm allergic to penicillin, but it was never anything major. Give me the shot. If I die, I die. Fuck it. I don't care. I haven't wanted to take anything. Let stuff heal naturally. This is dumb. Let stuff heal naturally. What stuff, Andrew? Where do you draw the line? If you snap your Achilles, are you going to let that heal naturally? If you break your arm, are you going to let that heal naturally? Are you just not going to get a cast? If you pull a ligament in your knee, are you just going to let that heal naturally? What about if you get a migraine? Are you going to let that heal naturally? Like, where do you draw the line? And again, the COVID vaccine is a preventative measure. You don't have to let something heal naturally if you don't get it. Of course, I understand breakthrough cases and everything like that, but the majority of people are not breakthrough cases. I think I saw this statistic where it was like the total percentage of breakthrough cases was like 1% in regards to all of the shots, all of the vaccinations given out. I will fact check that, but I think it was relatively low. Anyway, stupid. In this case, I had COVID and it wasn't that bad. I didn't want to take the chance. I don't know if it causes cancer or anything like that. Where is, like, I don't understand how people take these leaps in logic. You're not getting injected with cancer cells. You're getting injected, at least with the mRNA vaccine, you are getting injected. You're not even getting injected with the virus. That might be wrong. I don't know. I'm dumb. But either way, a traditional vaccine gave your body a small amount of a dead virus so that way your body could build an immunity to it. Like, where are the jumps in logic happening? I hope it doesn't cause cancer. I don't get vaccinated because I don't want my kid to have autism. Who thinks of this? Like, if you don't want the vaccine, just say it. Just say, I don't want the shot. Why not? Because I don't want it. It's like, okay, I think that's silly of you. I think it's selfish. But at least you're not going off on these ridiculous tangents. Like, I don't know if it causes cancer or anything like that. Meanwhile, you don't know what long-term effects you have from COVID currently. You don't know if you have permanent respiratory damage. You don't know what your lungs look like. You can't see your fucking lungs. You don't know what's going on with your body. There are people who still, they get COVID and they have long COVID, which means they still deal with the ramifications from COVID. Also dealing with pneumonia, shit like that. Like, it cripples your respiratory system. So to say, I don't know if it causes cancer or anything like that. Well, bitch, guess what? We don't know what COVID causes. So that's a moot point. Wiggins continues, no one in my family is vaccinated. It's not really something we believe in. You don't believe in modern medicine. I get it. Or at least you don't have a belief in modern medicine when it doesn't supposedly, quote unquote, benefit you. This is just like, fuck, this is so stupid. And then Sean Hyken finishes. This is the one I would have liked to follow up on, but didn't get the chance to. I love that. I'm going to favorite that. So what he's saying is vaccination mandates work. He had the choice to sit out games and not be paid. That's true. Like, I think someone said that him and Kyrie would have missed like $14 or $15 million worth of compensation by refusing to sit out. God damn. Someone goes, what exactly does he believe in again? And the reply says, living like they did in the 1800s without modern medicine. Like, by this logic, Andrew Wiggins is like, oh, we don't believe in that. So when you suffer like an ankle sprain or something minor, you know, I don't want Andrew Wiggins to die. I don't want him to have any serious, you know, long-term effects from his COVID. I don't want him to suffer any serious injuries, but it's like you suffer a minor ankle sprain. It causes you to miss a couple of games. You know what they would have done to you in the 1800s? They would have just fucking chopped it off. And you probably would have gotten an infection. And then they would have just cut your whole fucking leg off. And that's it. Like, this is amazing. Like, but at least you got the fucking shot. So yes, folks, vaccine mandates work. If you tell people they have to get the shot or, you know, find a new line of work or not play or not be compensated fully, they're going to do it. I think that Bradley Beal is going to get the shot at some point. I think that Kyrie Irving is going to get the shot at some point. I'm sure that by hook or by crook, the NBA will make sure that it has 100% of its players vaccinated. I don't foresee that being an issue. I do think that the news cycle will be fucking insane until it happens. But that's all I have to say on Andrew Wiggins. I'm glad that he got the shot, but I'm really disappointed that he continues to be foolish about it. Like, he didn't have to. The worst part is that he didn't even have to say everything that he said. Like, he could have stopped. He could have stopped after the first quote. I felt like the only options were to get vaccinated or play in the NBA. It was a tough decision. You could have not said all this shit about me still being healthy. You know, hopefully there's people, or you don't own your body or some shit. Like, you don't have to throw in this fucking, you know, anecdotal experience of you having a bad reaction to Tylenol. FDA approved, by the way. It can kill you. So just remember that. Synthetic drugs, regardless of what they are, can kill you, which is why they have fucking directions on them. You can't die from taking in too much vaccine because a medical professional is administering it to you. I don't even know if, like, dude, you can't even fucking get more than one vaccine shot because it's already bottled. Like, this is so dangerous because it's like, okay, he got the vaccine, but obviously he didn't want to. I don't care about that. But people are still going to be hesitant about taking the vaccine. This is perpetuating vaccine hesitancy amongst people who are already hesitant about it. Like, there are a lot of Black people who are hesitant towards the vaccine and hesitant towards the medical field in general because of things that have happened in the past. And of course, you know, I don't want to say like be skeptical, but like I can understand. And then what makes it even worse that I can't understand is that this is feeding into the already super inflammatory anti-vax rhetoric, which is just people who are just dumb. Like, they want to make it a whole fucking thing. Just like when Draymond Green was saying some shit about it being politicized, right? Okay, I get that it's been politicized because everything is political now. It's fucking stupid. It's dumb. It's public health. If you want to politicize it, go ahead. I'm not going to. I have fucking better things to do than worry about a gigantic conspiracy about the government trying to control the population by giving them the vaccine. Like, dude, there are so many other things that happens behind the scenes where the government controls your life and you're worried about the vaccine. Give me a break. I don't even know if I want to talk about Draymond Green's lengthy... I'm trying so hard not to peel my skin right now. His fucking lengthy diatribe about the vaccine, because like, I really just don't care. And then I saw this thing about Enes Kanter where he was kind of criticizing LeBron for not using his platform to, you know, tell people to go and get vaccinated. Meanwhile, LeBron said, yeah, I was skeptical of the vaccine at first. It's like, there were a lot of people that were skeptical at first. Me. Myself, I was skeptical of the vaccine at first. Should I have been? No. Because, again, there's a reason that in the United States, only 3 companies are distributing COVID-19 vaccines. It's because those companies were the only ones that had clinical trials that proved theirs were more than beneficial to the population. Of the, like, 24 drug companies that were vying for that sweet, sweet government dough for the COVID-19 vaccine, only 3 in the United States got it. The clinical trials showed that the short-term effects of the COVID-19 vaccine were overwhelmingly positive. As far as the long-term effects, guess what? You can't project that with anything. Anything. No drug that you're trying to put through FDA approval, unless you've been running tests for 10 years. And believe me, when it comes to over-the-counter drugs or prescription drugs, the pharmaceutical companies, they don't want to spend all that time and not turn a profit. And here's another thing. Say what you will about the pharmaceutical companies. Not a fan of them. Not a fan of the current healthcare system in America. But what's bad for business? People fucking dying while using your product. I'm sure a lot of my listeners didn't live through that whole scandal with Tylenol back in like the 60s or 70s or I think it was the 60s or 70s, like the Tylenol killer. This guy would go into pharmacies and pop the tops off of Tylenol bottles and, you know, put some sort of poison in them. Guess what? Turns out that was not good for Johnson & Johnson. So what'd they do? They developed the anti-tamper seal, where you get a bottle of Tylenol, you see that it's been tampered with, you know not to fucking use it. The worst thing a company can have is people die while using their product. Like, and dude, you're going to complain about LeBron not using his platform when he says, I got this because I felt it was right for my family. Like, that, good enough. Good enough for me, dude. Selfless. Be selfless. Do it. Don't do it for yourself. Do it for everybody else. Do it for the older people in your life. Like, it's just, it's so annoying. I was waiting. I don't want to say I was waiting, but like, I was hoping that this wouldn't permeate the NBA because like, the NBA hasn't built itself as that league, but yet here we are. Anyway, let's get off this vaccine bullshit for a little bit. We're going to talk about DeAndre Ayton. So this news came out this morning, or Tuesday morning, I should say. The All Reliable, Adrian Wojnarowski, reported that the Phoenix Suns and DeAndre Ayton have come to a stalemate on contract negotiations. He published this article 10 o'clock Eastern. Wow. Yeah, this is definitely something that DeAndre Ayton wants wanted his camp to put out. 10 a.m. on a Tuesday. On a Tuesday during preseason, when the only shit that's happening are the games, where really there's no news coming out. So, oh my God, NordVPN is so fucking annoying. They just like, they bombard me with updates. Oh my God. Ugh, dude, I love the service, but please don't send me an update reminder every hour on the hour. Please stop. Anyway, back to the story. The Phoenix Suns' reluctance to offer a max rookie contract extension to former number one pick DeAndre Ayton has stalled discussions on a deal, sources told ESPN on Tuesday. Ayton, a key part of the Suns' run to the 2021 NBA Finals, has no intention of accepting a deal less than the comparable max contracts signed by several of his 2018 draft mates, including Trae Young, Luka Doncic, SGA, and most recently, Michael Porter Jr. 8-23 is eligible for a five-year, $172.5 million extension with escalators that could reach $207 million, a deal that many executives league-wide expected would become complete in short order this offseason. But now, with a looming October 18th deadline for the rookie extensions, sources said between the the marinara sauces said the talks between... All right, we're not going to do that anymore. The marinara the sources said the talks between the Suns and Ayton's reps have been slowed by ownership's current assertion that Ayton doesn't deserve to be included in that group of players, and a belief by the seven-footer that his performance, the potential, and the marketplace dictate that he does. How? What a fucking slap in the face by Robert Sauver, who I'm pretty sure is still the owner of the Phoenix Suns, to say that your 23-year-old big man, the guy who averaged 14-10 throughout the regular season, who shot upwards of 60% consistently throughout the playoffs, who was one of the better interior defenders throughout the entirety of the regular season, who held opponents to like 6 percentage points below the league average on shots inside of 6 feet. Imagine being able to say with a straight face that he does not deserve a max contract extension, especially after Michael Porter Jr. got this same extension after just one good season. Hilarious. The Suns are back. The Suns are back, guys. The Suns are back. Just months after making it to the NBA Finals, the Suns are back. Without a deal, Ayton could become a restricted free agent next summer. The Suns keep matching rights on any offer sheet next year, but risk creating a level of acrimony, I don't even know what that word means, with Ayton that could impact the team's long-term relationship with him and the pursuit of another Western Conference championship. A significant part of Ayton's development and maturity has revolved around the relationship and trust he's built with head coach Monty Williams in their two seasons together. That would be tested should Ayton spend the season believing he's headed to restricted free agency. Ayton blossomed under Williams, becoming the two-way force the Suns imagined when selecting him at number one 3 years ago. Now, it is important to remember that the reluctance to give Ayton a contract extension is the result of ownership, not James Jones, not James Jones, pardon me, and not Monty Williams. Monty Williams, I'm almost certain, wants DeAndre Ayton to stay. I'm sure all the players want this whole controversy to be pushed behind them at the by the beginning of the season. But Robert Sarver, whatever the fuck his name is, doesn't want to pay the luxury tax. I'm pretty sure that's the holdup here. It's not that he is not confident in Ayton's abilities. It's that he does not want to pay out of pocket to bring a championship. Meanwhile, when you are the owner of a sports team, it is literally your job to build a championship level team. You're not running it like a traditional business to make money. Of course, making money is great, but you want to produce high caliber players and win championships. You want guys to win MVPs. You want to bring home championships. That's what we're doing here. But the Suns simply don't want to do that. Sarver. If Suns owner Robert Sarver doesn't come to an agreement with Ayton before the deadline, it will certainly raise questions about his commitment to constructing a sustainable contender in the Western Conference. Yeah, if you're not willing to spend the money on a homegrown talent, not even a year, literally 3 fucking months, after going to the NBA Finals, when will you? Will you only splurge on super-duper stars? Because I don't think that negative PR like this is going to encourage guys to come to Phoenix. Because you did it for Devin Booker, obviously. You gave Chris Paul a super sus contract. 4 years, $120 million, and he's like 36 years old. But you don't want to pay DeAndre Ayton the max money comparable to his peers when his production, or maybe not his production is a little lower than, you know, other number one overall picks, but his impact on your team is on par with that of someone like Trae Young, of someone like Michael Porter Jr., of someone like Luka Doncic. You're not going to want to pay for that. This is going to quickly turn into a disaster. It's going to turn into a disaster. Sarver hasn't paid luxury tax as Suns owner since the 2009-10 season, a full decade before the franchise returned to the playoffs in 2020-2021. There were long questions about Sarver's decision to trade future All-Star guard Joe Johnson in 2005 instead of extending his contract, a move that many believe cost the Suns a championship in the Steve Nash, Amari Stoudemire era. 100%. Nash and Stat were an amazing duo. And it just sucks that they ran into teams like the Lakers, the Spurs, the Dallas Mavericks. But guess what, man? You would have fared much better if you had somebody like Joe Johnson. DeAndre Ayton is a Joe Johnson. Just the play style is a little bit different. Like, the Suns are an upper echelon team in the West. And DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker will keep them that for the next couple of years. But Sarver does not want to make that happen. Woj also adds an anecdote about many contending teams have 3 max players on the roster. For example, Denver had Porter join league MVP Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray with 3 maxes this summer. Anthony Davis, LeBron James, Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, James Harden, or Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, James Harden. I love Kyrie, but Steph would be pretty nice. Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Chris Middleton, and Drew Holiday doesn't have a max, but I think that if he asked Milwaukee for it, they'd be like, yeah, fuck it, no questions. Moving on. Ayton averaged 14 points, 10.5 rebounds, and 1.2 blocks a game in his third season. Among his playoff successes, according to ESPN Stats and Info, his 66% postseason field goal percentage was the highest in NBA history. He shot at least 50% in 17 straight games, trailing only Shaquille O'Neal for the longest postseason streak in league history. Ayton held NBA Finals MVP Giannis Antetokounmpo to 53% shooting as his primary defender in the finals, while Giannis shot 70% against the rest of the Suns. Ayton and Paul's partnership was one of the most productive in the league last season, with Paul assisting on 143 of Ayton's baskets. Only Steph Curry and Draymond Green had more as a combination. I don't understand why there is an impasse. There's no reason for it. There's no reason for these guys to be stunlocked on a contract extension. It's a dumb move by Suns ownership, and they're going to cost themselves they're going to cost themselves a lot of playoff success, and they're just going to fracture their relationship with their fans, because when was the last time up until recently that Phoenix Suns fans had something to root for? I can say this myself as a Brooklyn Nets fan. You know, we had runs where we had players to root for, but it really didn't happen until D'Angelo Russell came, Caris LeVert came, and now it's blossomed into this. The Suns had that phase, and now they're, again, in the contender phase. And you're going to let that evaporate after one season? Pay the luxury tax, suck it the fuck up, and try to bring a championship to your city. Like, sports in Arizona, it's looking pretty good right now, at least as far as football and basketball are concerned. I can't attest to the MLB, but I think I'm going to close it out with that. That was the story that I wanted to lead with, and we definitely got sidetracked. Plus, I think my phone's going to run out of battery at some point. As always, thank you guys so very much for coming to hang out with me today. Everything that I'm associated with is down in the description below. Follow me on social media. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. If you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, subscribe. Leave a rating and a review. It helps me out a ton. If you're listening to this on Spotify, go ahead and follow and engage with it however you may. If you like this episode, tell a friend about it. If you didn't, also tell a friend about it. Any press is good press. And with that said, I'll catch you guys in the next one.